Welcome back to another episode of Believe in FSU Basketball. This is your host, Nick Andre, and I appreciate you guys for tuning in. My co-host, Austin, will be on momentarily as we will discuss things along the men's side regarding transfers, regarding signings, and everything that has something to do with off-season content regarding the men's basketball team. However, we always have to start things off with the women's side because we had to prepare for a huge game in the NCAA tournament. So let's go back to Selection Sunday, when the world was watching, everybody in Tallahassee was watching. There was a lot of fans that was at the Tucker Center watching with the team, looking to see where we would be placed in the NCAA tournament. Luckily, we were placed in the Portland region as a 9 seed, and we had to face the 8 seed Alabama. So for those who follow me on Twitter, I was overly excited about this matchup. I felt like both of these teams were evenly matched, and I even discussed that in the previous episode. One thing that you could say about Alabama is that they definitely had more size than Florida State, but at the end of the day, that didn't matter, because one thing about Florida State is that, yes, they can be undersized, but they always find a way to win. And even Mikayla Timpson highlighted that in her pregame interview when she was talking about them going up against Tennessee and them going up against other teams like Virginia Tech and others who had tremendous size, but the team just figuring out ways to overcome the size advantage and just figure out ways to win. So coming into this matchup, both teams were evenly matched. You know, both are very high-scoring teams. Both are great rebounding teams. So everybody knew that this was going to be a dogfight from the beginning. And going into the game Friday, at the start of the game, Florida State got off to a really good start. They got off to a really great start, and it was all thanks to Taniya Latson and Mikayla Timpson. For Taniya, for those who know, as I mentioned several times before, she ended up missing last season's postseason as she went down with an injury. So you could tell coming into this matchup, she was more excited than ever. She was more motivated than ever. She did a really good job at picking her spots in the mid-range, being able to attack the basket relentlessly, you know, finishing around the rim. Taniya got off to a really great start. And then also Mikayla Timpson, you know, what more can you say about her just being such a great low post scorer, anticipating passes on a low block, and just being able to score inside, which is overly tremendous. And those were the two key factors for the team, you know, throughout that first quarter. But the one thing that I will say is that give credit to Alabama, because even though Florida State got off to a really good start, they just kept coming at us. And one thing that I'll say is that they did a really great job at running the pick and roll with the bigs. And then in the second quarter, you started to see the team get off to a really good start beyond the three-point line. So overall, everything was clicking for Alabama. And I've said this even in the previous episode. Alabama's going to find a way to score. It doesn't matter how much you pressure them. It doesn't matter what type of coverage you have in your half-court defense. They are going to find a way to score, whether they move the ball, whether it's players cutting back door, or whether it's just, you know, players anticipating passes along the wing or along the corner. They are going to find ways to put the ball in the basket. And defense was a huge factor for Florida State this game if they were going to figure out a way to win. So both teams had a really good start throughout the first half. The game was tied at 40 heading into halftime. And even though the game was tied, you still felt like Florida State still had a way to win this game. As long as they attacked the glass, as long as they continue to finish with high percentage shots, you just knew that this team could find a way to come out on top. However, and this has been something that I've expressed on previous episodes and even in articles, when you watch this Florida State women's basketball team, their biggest enemy has been the third quarter. And it sucks at the end of the day because they end up going into the locker room at halftime with some momentum. They have a really great end to the first half. And then for some reason, when they come out of the locker room in the second half, they tend to keep their foot off the gas, you know, the turnovers, sloppy plays, you know, on offense, not being locked in defensively the way that they're supposed to. And that's what we saw in Friday's game against Alabama. And Alabama took full advantage of that. Continue to take high percentage shots, continuing to score alongside the perimeter. And, you know, that really did help them, you know, extend their lead. Florida State didn't even score their first basket of the third quarter until about 3 minutes in. And they just could not find a rhythm. They just could not find any momentum during that quarter. And guess what? They got outscored 23-11, and they were down 63-51 at the end of the third quarter. So now they're playing this dangerous game, because now the fourth quarter, which potentially end was the last quarter of the season, you're down double digits. Now you got to find a way to come back to the game. And they went back to the formula of the Taniya Latson and Mikayla Timpson experience that got them off to a really good start in the first quarter. but it was just far too little too late. And one thing that I'll say is that we have to give credit to Alabama, because Sarah Ashley Barker is by far the best scorer. She's one of the more underrated scorers in the country and one of the underrated scorers in the SEC. And she was in foul trouble throughout most of the game, which is good because she wasn't a big X factor offensively. However, the biggest issue was the supporting cast being able to step up. And it's important that I highlight this player in particular because she was just super dominant in this game, which was Essence Cody, the freshman who had 20 points, 14 rebounds, and 4 blocks. She was living in the paint the entire matchup. Like I said, you know, Alabama was so good at running that pick and roll. And Essence Cody was one of the X factors in that pick and roll, just being able to score high percentage shots defensively, especially against Mikayla Timpson, using her size, using her length to alter shots, to be able to make things uncomfortable under the basket. You know, just doing everything that she could for her team. And without Essence Cody's impact on this team, especially as a freshman, you know, coming into this high stage of the NCAA tournament, without that impact, who knows where Alabama would have been. Another player, Aaliyah Nye, who had a terrific all-around performance offensively, 18 points and 6 rebounds. Loyal McQueen, who had 13 points, 5 rebounds, and 6 assists. Carly Weathers, who also had a really good game as well. So it was just a committee of players for Alabama that really helped get this win overall. And I feel like that's something that we didn't really see from Florida State. We had some moments from Sarah Bajetti. Well, they had some moments from Omaria Gordon, but it just wasn't enough to be able to propel them and just be able to get that win. So kudos to Alabama. You know, they ended up winning the game 82-74. And then, of course, ended up sending Florida State home in the first round. And, of course, I made my bold prediction in the previous episode whenever I said that Florida State was going to be able to get to the Elite Eight. I did feel like that. I definitely felt like that. Unfortunately, yes, I was wrong. But like I say, you know, give credit to Alabama. Alabama came in ready. They came in locked in. They definitely prepared before the game or leading up to the game. And they executed everything on both ends of the floor just to be able to get them that win. Like I said, Florida State, they tried to come alive in the fourth quarter. And I feel like they had a really good fourth quarter shooting-wise. But at the end of the day, Alabama just had that momentum. And there was nothing that they could do about it. So, yes, this was the last game of the season for Florida State. Tanaya Latson finished with 25 points and 5 assists. Mikayla Timpson finished with her 18th double-double of the season, which she already broke the record of 23 points, 11 rebounds. She also had 3 blocks and 2 steals. So when you look at the stat sheet, you couldn't get any more from those two players. You know, they definitely provided everything, especially with Tanaya Latson, with this being her first tournament game. She got off to a really hot start, and even in the fourth quarter, you know, just continued to set the tone by attacking the basket relentlessly. She had a few and ones. She also had some other mid-range shots as well. So, you know, your star players definitely stepped up to the plate. But personally, if you ask me, if we would have got more from the supporting cast, who knows where that game would have gone? Because, I mean, they only lost by 8 points. But at the end of the day, it is what it is. Unfortunately, the team in Garden and Gold cannot continue to go dancing. So that leads to the bigger question as far as what is next for this team. So the main pieces, Tanaya Latson is going into her junior year. And I'm really excited to see what's next for her because I've been on record saying that she's been such an underrated player, in my opinion, across the country. And one thing I'll say is that I'm glad that she started to get some more recognition, especially after such a terrific sophomore year that she did have. And I think that her junior year, she's just going to be able to take it to another level. I mean, you know, you talk about all the accolades, you know, being one of the top shooting guards in the country, scoring over 1,000 points for her career. And she's only done that within 2 years. So now she has another 2, potentially 3 more years to be able to accomplish that. So I'm really excited to see what's next for her. I feel like she can continue to elevate her game. I mean, you know, we talk about her ability to drive and just being able to attack the basket for high percentage shots, but she's also continued to show that perimeter game that I don't think people recognize is really good with her. You know, I mean, she can knock down 3s, even in the Alabama game, like I said before, being able to knock down mid-range shots. So she has an entire arsenal of just moves offensively that I think she's going to be able to unleash even more, especially within the offseason as she continues to just keep working and expanding her game. So I'm just excited to see what she's going to provide in her junior year. And then, of course, Omaria Gordon and Mikayla Timpson, you know, both of those players are going to be seniors. And KK Timpson took her game to a whole nother level this year. Not saying that she wasn't great in her first 2 years because she was definitely very impactful. But, you know, this junior year was really, really good for Mikayla Timpson. Just being able to elevate her game offensively, you know, showing her ability to be a low post scorer, showing tremendous footwork, a lot of post moves inside. And then on top of that, you know, the double doubles was just really incredible as well. So Mikayla Timpson definitely took her game to another level. And then Amaria Gordon as well, who I believe people don't highlight enough as far as her being such a big important factor. You know, I mean, I've already talked about that Syracuse game in the ACC tournament where she came up huge. Omaria, one thing about Omaria is that Omaria is not always, she may not always be the highlighting factor of the team, but when you need her, she steps up big tremendously. And it's not even just scoring. You know, she, like I said before, she's a very underrated rebounder. She can get after defensively regardless of who she's defending, whether it's another point guard or another big. You know, she's shown that she's not going to back down from any challenge, and she's going to be able to embrace that wholeheartedly. And now that Omari is going into her senior year, she's already experienced, you know, she's already had a tournament experience, you know, just being able to just continue to provide that leadership is just going to be very important. And that's what I'm excited about, man. But, you know, who knows, you know, there might be some transfers, you know, that may be on their way out, and there may be some players that may be on their way in. I'm really excited to see what this offseason can unfold for them, because this has been like this past season, which is really incredible. And I'm really proud of just being able to watch this team up close and just watching the chemistry, watching the camaraderie that they have. And it was tough because, especially coming into the season, and Brooke Wyckoff had to announce to the team that she had breast cancer. And, you know, even just me watching interviews with Tania Lassen or Mikayla Timpson or Sarah Bajetti or whoever it was, you know, her just like those players just talking about how strong she was and how she didn't even cry whenever she did have to break that news to her team. It just showed a lot of resiliency, like not even to just Coach Wyckoff, but just to the team overall. And they had a really incredible year overall. And, you know, just the chemistry that this team has, the camaraderie, the ability to overcome adversity, play through adversity, and just figure out ways to come out on top throughout the season, which is really incredible. So this team is only going to get better. And I know that they're losing key players. They're losing Alexis Tucker and Sarah Bajetti, as both of those players were seniors. And kudos to them, you know, especially Sarah Bajetti, who had such a great career at Florida State. And I think that she should be highlighted as one of the best to ever play, or definitely one of the more important factors to ever play in the uniform. But heading into next year, I think that this team is going to be much better and more improved, you know, than what we saw this past season. So that wraps it up for the women. Unfortunately, we will not continue to go dancing, but overall, you have to be proud of what this team was just able to accomplish throughout the year, you know, both individually and as a whole team moving forward. So now let's transition to the men's side. I got my guy Austin coming on, and we're going to talk about a few news that went down, you know, for the men's side. Tune in.
Austin, how you doing, man? It's glad to have you back on, as always.
Yes, sir. Glad to be here. It's March, best time of the year. Things are underway.
Facts. What's been your thoughts about March Madness so far? Because one of my biggest observations that I've seen is maybe the SEC is not as strong as what it was. I mean, we see Kentucky get knocked out. Auburn got knocked out by Yale. So what has been your thoughts about March Madness so far?
It's been a lot of high-quality basketball. I agree with you on the SEC stuff, which I'd been saying for the last few months, I was not a fan of the SEC. I was fading a lot of those teams. So for them to have the first round that they did, I wasn't too surprised. And we'll see what happens with Tennessee as they go forward and Alabama tonight as we're recording. But not too surprised by that. I have liked a lot of the shot making we've seen. There's been some great players, even Cousinard at Oregon. I know they lost last night, but that he played a heck of a game. There's been a lot of high quality basketball.
It definitely has. And I mean, my thing about the SEC is, you know, I'm not gonna say that I said it was the best conference, but I thought it was, or I mean, I still believe that it's pretty strong. But to be able to watch Auburn go down to Yale, we watched Kentucky lose to Oakland Hill, even South Carolina lost to Oregon in the first round, you know, to see these SEC teams go down in the first round was just really surprising to me. I thought, you know, at least a few teams, especially Kentucky, you know, go at least a little bit further, at least week 16 or Elite Eight. But I mean, that's what March Madness is all about, man. So, you know, at the end of the day, it's like, you know, we're surprised, but at the end of the day, you know, this is what comes with it.
Yeah, my thing was they just couldn't, like, if you look at their conference records and even some of their non-conference states, they just could not win away from home, any of these teams. So for them to have this performance that they have in the tournament so far doesn't surprise me. The Auburn loss did surprise me. I was higher on them than anyone else in the SEC. So to see them lose to Yale surprised me. But every result outside of that really hasn't.
I agree 100%, man. But let's dive into some Florida State hoops, man. As always, I mean, you know, the offseason is, you know, heating up per se. We got some guys that are going to be on their way out in the transfer portal. So let's start with Deonte Green. You know, we've definitely spoke on Deonte, you know, in the previous few episodes. Just announced that he's going to enter the transfer portal the other day. Averaged around 4.5 points, nearly 2 rebounds, had 6 double-digit scoring performances. So are you surprised with Deonte heading out of the program?
Not at all. You know, even though he started 20 games as Cameron Corn was getting back into form from his toe injury and Coach Hamilton didn't want to mess up the rotation, by the end of the season, he was just out of the rotation entirely. I mean, you look at senior night against Miami, 16 different players played and he wasn't one of them. Ryden was all on the wall pretty much from there. And then I want to say he didn't play in the first round against Virginia Tech in the ACC tournament as well. So 2 straight DMPs after he was starting 20 games. You could tell that he was on the way out.
Yeah, there had to have been some frustration on his side, and it's definitely understandable. I mean, he's like you mentioned, you know, early in the season, he had such a big role. You know, there was games where he started, and even when he didn't start, you know, he was still a valuable player in the second unit. So to see him go from that to towards the end of the season, you know, his minutes dwindled to where even in that game against North Carolina in the ACC tournament, I think he only played about 4 minutes. You know, I just felt like, you know, it was really surprising to me. And, you know, it's funny that you mentioned Miami, that, you know, they played 16 players and that he wasn't one of them. You know, I was honestly thinking like, man, is he injured or something like that? Like, is he just out of the rotation or is he really hurt or anything? So that was something I was really curious about. But I think Deonte is going to find a new home, and I think he's going to thrive in his new home. Honestly, I mean, he's a really tremendous all around player. I love what he provides on offense, you know, with his passing, his playmaking. He's able to set screens, you know, he can run the pick and roll. And he's also shown the ability to be able to step outside too and knock down 3-point shots. So, you know, his game is just continuing to expand. At least to me, it looked like it continued to expand as the season went on. But, you know, mentioning, you know, the minutes, you know, and, you know, and just watching his playing time decrease was just something that was hard to watch.
I think part of it goes back to before he even got to Florida State, when he tore his ACL in high school, and he went from being a guy that Florida State was recruiting as a perimeter guy that's going to play the four. Right. Where and then that ACL injury hits, and now he's forced to become a five just because of the limited mobility, and he's just not an ACC level five in my opinion. And Florida State needed him to be. He had some big games, you know, especially early in the season, 4 straight games with 10 or more points in November and into December. But as ACC play went along, you could tell that other teams were targeting him, going at him on defense, and that 3-point shot never developed enough for him to have a consistent role in this offense the way Florida State would have liked.
What schools do you believe has his best interest? Because I didn't see any other any schools that were actually interested. I know that I got the news about him entering the transfer portal, but I haven't seen any schools that have been interested.
Yeah, I haven't seen any schools mentioned as of yet. I could see him going a little bit closer to home, like maybe a program like Furman or Wofford in the Northern South Carolina region. Maybe App State, which is not too far from his home in Asheville. I can see that being a pretty good fit for him as he continues to improve the strength in his knee.
Yeah, I agree. I mean, I'm definitely going to be on the radar, you know, looking at any particular team that, you know, that may be interested in him. I think wherever he does go next, I think it may be a better situation. I'm sure that he's going to consider a lot of schools carefully and they, you know, just make his decision for there. So, Deonte, I'm definitely wishing you the best moving forward. Now we dive into Primo Spears, who has also entered the transfer portal. I know that there's a lot of mixed emotions about this, you know, as he enters his fourth team and, you know, when he's heading into a senior year. Had a pretty solid year, to say the least, at least numbers-wise, you know, averaged around 10 points, you know, shot 39% from the floor, had some pretty good double-digit performances scoring-wise, and then also showed, you know, also started to, like, gradually show his playmaking as the season went on. So what are your thoughts on Primo entering the transfer portal?
Yeah, also not surprised by this one. I'm pretty sure I've talked about on this, but that situation where he, at Virginia Tech, he fouls out intentionally on Lynn Kidd, who's an 89% free throw shooter with a minute and a half left, was weird. Then he plays the first half against Duke the next game and then reportedly decides to sit himself the second half and didn't want to play. And then Coach Hamilton said, okay, you're just not going to play the next game either. Once that situation happened, I'm like, yeah, there's just no way he's going to get a second year here in Tallahassee. He's a smaller, more toxic Caleb Mills, and Caleb Mills didn't work. So I'm not surprised by this whatsoever.
Yeah, it's crazy. I mean, the whole situation, even from the beginning, you know, with him not being eligible in the beginning of the season due to the transfer rules, And then, of course, him showing up around, like, you know, mid-December. You know, I didn't even, it's crazy. I didn't even know any of that that went down as far as, you know, him just basically subbing himself out. And then, you know, with the whole situation with him and Coach Ham. So, I guess, I mean, you know, even though he has had his moments throughout the season where he has played well, I never really felt like Florida State may have been the best situation for him. Okay. I just feel like, system-wise, I just feel like, you know, it didn't really work for him. But, I mean, coming from Georgetown, you know, coming into his first year at Florida State, you know, he was looking for a new position. But I just think it was just something that didn't really work out in his favor. So we'll just have to see where he goes next after that.
Yeah, I agree. I can see him going back to the Atlantic 10 Conference where he started his career. He started at Duquesne, who 2 years later, they're in the NCAA tournament playing in the second round. So I don't know if that says something or not about him. But I could see him. He's from Hartford, Connecticut. So I could see him going back somewhere in the Northeast, like St. Bonaventure is probably a little bit too low, but like a Rhode Island level school, I could absolutely see him going there and being a little bit more successful than he would be at the ACC.
Yeah. Do you believe that it hurts him that he's going into his fourth school?
Absolutely. You know, I said when Florida State got him last year, I'm like, you know, there's a reason that he's on his third school in 3 years. You know, that doesn't happen very often. And even one of the transfers they announced they contacted, you know, I don't love people that continue to switch schools, 3 schools in 3 years. I don't love, especially 4 schools in 4 years. Immediate red flag for me if I was a college coach.
Yeah, and I think that's the thing too. Because I mean, he is talented, but you know, the fact that he's continuing to keep transferring from one school to the next, one school to the next. Like, I could see if he spent 2 years at this school and then said, "Hey, you know what? I think I've done my time here, and now let's move on to another situation." But the fact that you're going to your fourth school in 4 years, you know, it's like I said, I mean, he's a really talented player, but you know, a lot of coaches will look at that and be like, I don't know if you're gonna be fit for this program, you know, consider, you know, your transfer history.
Yeah, I totally agree. If you look at, you know, if you look at one of the teams in the tournament right now, James Madison, they have JB Bickerstaff, who started his career at Drexel, used that opportunity to get to Boston College, and then graduated, you know, graduate transferred back down to James Madison. That's different. That's 3 schools in 5 years, and he used that last transfer after he'd already graduated. That's fine with me. But in a situation like this where, you know, Duquesne, he played well, tried to get that bigger opportunity at Georgetown, who was terrible with him as a lead option. Coach gets fired. He goes to Florida State. That clearly didn't work out. It's just – it's not a great sign.
Yeah, I agree 100%. But, hey, I mean, in this 1 year at Florida State, I could say, you know, Primo, appreciate your time here. I think that, you know, there were moments where he didn't make a big impact, but – you know, fortunately, he just wasn't able to work out to where he could play multiple years here. But let's dive into some big news, man, that is looking to take place. High school 4-star point guard Daquan Davis looking to sign with the Florida State Seminoles. For those who may not know him, he's from Georgia. Played for RWE and Overtime Elite. Like I mentioned before, you know, 4-star athlete. So tell us more about Daquan Davis and, you know, his signing at Florida State.
It's Florida State's never had a player like this. Honestly, or at least it's been a long time. He's small. He's listed at 6'1", 176 pounds. Believe he's closer to 6 foot flat and maybe 165 pounds, 170 maybe. But man, is he explosive and dynamic. Can score easily at all three levels. He can get to the basket. He can hit step back threes. He's got a really pure jump shot. But despite his size, he plays really physically on defense. He's not afraid to use his body, not afraid to use his hands and get in passing lanes or even just swipe down on the ball that the guy on the guy he's guarding and get steals. It's been a long time since Florida State's had a player like this. Even if you just go back, you know, size related, you know, David Nichols was listed at 6'1", 185 pounds. CJ Walker was kind of that same kind of physical levels, but they weren't as dynamic scoring the ball as Daquan Davis is. I mean, he's averaging, I want to say he was averaging 18 points per game in the OTE regular season. Then he's up to 22. In the playoffs, shooting 37% from three, 6 rebounds, 6 assists. Like, Florida State has not had a point guard like this in a while. And it makes me wonder if they're going to make that defensive scheme change that I talked about last time, because you can't be switching 6'1" Daquan Davis on to some of the 7-footers that are going to be roaming around the ACC. And, you know, if they go back to that 2016 to 2019 defense, you know, worked with CJ Walker, worked with David Nichols, it can work with Daquan Davis.
I had a chance to watch a few of his highlights over the weekend. And one thing that I'll say is I 100% agree with you. I mean, this guy, I think this guy is a star in the making. And I think that he's somebody that is going to step into Florida State and just being able to make that immediate impact. You know, you talk about the combination of his playmaking, you know, with him being unselfish, being able to find open players, his ability to attack the basket relentlessly, you know, he's a great three-level scorer, you know, being able to knock down perimeter shots. And then on top of that, defensively, you know, he's not afraid to go after it as well. So, you know, I think adding a guy like him could be really, really good for the team. My only question is, I wonder how he will be utilized. Like, would he probably be more of a second unit type guy?
For sure.
And that's what I was thinking too, you know, in Coach Hamilton's system, because I don't know. I honestly want to see how that would work with him starting next to Jameer Watkins, even though I don't think that would happen. I mean, I think that Jalen Worley definitely has that spot locked in, and, you know, mm-hmm. I mean, there's no question about it. But now Daquan Davis is a star in the making, and, you know, with him being so young and him, you know, coming into this program as a freshman, I think he's going to be really incredible.
Yeah, I can't remember the last time Florida State started a freshman point guard. I mean, you know, even Xavier Tan Mays was technically a sophomore when he started.
Yeah.
So it's been a long time since that could have happened. And I just think seniority is always going to be the way for Coach Hamilton's point guards. Jalen Worley will get that start next year, and you can bring Daquan Davis along, and he can be that instant microwave off the bench, give you, you know, hopefully at minimum 8 to 10 points off the bench, provide that score and provide that perimeter threat that, like I said, Florida State hasn't had a point guard like this. You know, it's always been the bigger guards, the Trent Forrest, the Xavier Tan Mays, the Raekwon Evans, the Jalen Worleys. It's been that for the last decade or so. So to have a guy like Davis that's just a pure fireball offensively, I'm really looking forward to seeing how he is, you know, in Tallahassee and in the system.
Yeah. I wonder if that'll be a problem possibly for, you know, for him to try to really utilize a smaller point guard to his full advantage. I wonder if that might be an issue now, because I mean, it's like you mentioned to me, like a lot of the other guys that we had in the past have been like bigger point guards that are around like 6'3", 6'4", maybe 6'5", per se.
Yeah, I trust me, I get it. You know, like I said, we've seen it work with David Nichols. I think this is gonna be the best comparison for this, even if Nichols was a lot stronger.
Right.
But granted, he was also a graduate student compared to a true freshman. Who knows where Davis will be a few years down the line? But I think that's gonna be your best, you know, one-to-one look on how Florida State might use him, where you're going to bring him off the bench. He's going to hit big shots. You know, he could kind of come in and provide instant offense, but he can also come in and kind of settle things down if the starting unit gets off to a slow start. I think that's going to be, at least at the beginning, how Florida State wants to use him. And then as the 24-25 season evolves, they can maybe evolve his role a little more as well. I think lineups where him and Worley are playing alongside each other can be really effective, just to give some more spacing alongside Worley. But I trust the staff.
What do you think of him and Jameer in the lineup in the backcourt? Like in certain stretches of the game.
I think it'd be fine. You know, Jameer showed a lot of progress down the stretch with his 3-point shot. If he were to return next season, I believe he shot over 45 or maybe 40% on catch and shoot threes. So having a guy like Davis that can beat just about anybody off the dribble and kick out to open threes, I think Watkins would be a big beneficiary of that.
I agree 100%. I'll be honest, man, this signing here, I think it really kicks off the offseason, and I think it really does put the program up on a good start as far as this offseason signing. So, like I said, I'm a big fan of Daquan Davis. I think that he's going to thrive as a star here. And just watch how his college career progresses, you know, in Florida State moving forward. Moving on to the next topic, you know, we could talk about Zach Anderson from Florida Gulf Coast, who is looking to visit Florida State on March 29th. Averaged around 13 points a game, shot 48% from the floor, a really good shooter. You know, I think that he could play just about anywhere on the floor offensively. So talk about Zach Anderson, you know, and his impact.
Yeah, so he's really good in the interior. Like his 2-point finishing's one of the best in his conference. He ended up finishing third team All Atlantic Sun Conference. But I did a little more background. He shot 72% effective field goal percentage on catch-and-shoot opportunities, which is in the 99th percentile in college basketball. Florida State hasn't had a player like that, arguably ever, having someone that efficient. And he's also scoring more than 1.2 points per possession in transition, something Florida State clearly wants to do, get out in transition and score at the rim. He's very good at that. And then he's also been able to show up in big games. You know, you mentioned he just averaged about 12 or 13 points. But if you look at their bigger games, Stetson, who won the Atlantic Sun, he had 23 points on 9 of 12 shooting. At home against Florida Atlantic, who was in the tournament in the Final Four a year ago, 21 points, 10 rebounds, 8 of 10 from the floor. 19 and 7 at Indiana, 14 and 7 at Minnesota, 10-6 at Pitt. So he's able to show up in these big moments. And that's something Florida State needs. They need some of this quality on the wings. And he's listed at 6'7", well built at well over 200 pounds. He can score from anywhere, like you just mentioned. And even if I don't think he should be a starter at an ACC level, at the very worst, he gives you quality depth on the wing if he were to come to Florida State. We'll see how this visit goes next weekend. But I'm excited about this. Florida State needs some scoring on the wings because it can't just be Jahmyr Watkins again.
I agree 100%. I mean, and you mentioned a lot of the big games that he stepped up against, in the Atlantic Sun, and, you know, just being able to show up against a lot of the top contenders there. I think that's really good. And I think, you know, with that being said, you know, I think that'd be really huge for this Florida State team, especially, you know, down the stretch. I mean, I know the ACC, you know, is a tough conference per se, but, you know, I feel like he's a guy that you could really use in, like, you know, some closing lineups, you know, that could provide a lot of spacing. And of course, you know, could play anywhere on the floor on offense and of course defensively as well. So, you know, he's a veteran guy. You know, he played, I believe, 4 years at Florida Gulf Coast. So, mm-hmm. You know, he obviously has that experience. So I think it'd be really huge for them, you know, to be able to acquire a guy like this. You know, I think offense was definitely one of the few issues there, you know, for Florida State. So adding him to the roster, you know, can definitely improve the shooting and, you know, can definitely, you know, just improve the versatility too.
Yeah, he's a career 38.7% shooter from three, shot 46% this last season on about 3.5 attempts. So he doesn't take a ton of them, but when he does, he makes them. And that's, you know, FSU needs that. They need that desperately. His free throw shooting definitely has to improve. He's under 70% for his career. But like you said, experience, 111 games played, 69 starts. You know, over 30 minutes per game each of these last two seasons for FGCU. And even if Florida Gulf Coast isn't, you know, the Dunk City level of Florida Gulf Coast we've seen, it's still a solid team. And, you know, he could give FSU a quality piece on the wing. They need him. They need a bunch of them, arguably three or four of them.
Exactly. And I feel like, you know, especially, you know, in certain lineups, I feel like he'll get a lot of opportunity, especially if you're playing in a lineup next to Jahmyr Watkins, Jalen Worthing, whoever. You know, those guys just draw automatic attention from the defense. And you know, you talk about Jahmyr and his improvements along the perimeter, but even, like, you know, him and Jalen Worley just being able to attack the defense, just be able to, you know, draw a crowd, you know, whenever they do penetrate. So I feel like with that being said, you know, that can lead a lot of open opportunities out on the wing or wherever for him, you know, to be able to knock down 3-point shots. So I'm excited. You know, I really want to see how this visit goes. And I feel like, I really hope that, you know, the Florida State is going to be in his best interest.
Yeah, this may be a interesting comparison, but I was watching some of his highlights today, and you know how the Rainers, you know, mock draft guides have the shades of when they're talking about comparing right. players. He gives me shades of Tobias Harris, and you know, at the NBA, Tobias Harris is whatever, but in college, Tobias Harris is really good. Mm-hmm. And I think Zach Anderson has a lot of similar traits. They have a very similar shooting motion where it's very upright and very mechanical. But Florida State can use a player like that. And I'm not saying he'll be Tobias Harris for Florida State, but he could have a similar kind of impact for sure.
I definitely agree. So, I mean, like I said, you know, I really hope that this visit goes well. And, you know, I really hope that in the end, he will choose to come to Tallahassee and play for the Seminoles. Last topic before we get out of here, we talked about Jerry Dang, you know, being interested in Florida State, but now it's official. He will also have a visit on April 12th. So, I mean, we both talked about him in the previous episode. And I'm a really big fan of him. And I personally feel like if Bob Miller were to leave Florida State, you know, and, you know, pursue endeavors elsewhere, I feel like that's a guy that could definitely step into that role and be able to fill that role successfully.
Yeah, even if Bob comes back, having a guy like Jerry Dane and that can shoot 40% from three with that length and that athleticism, you got to take that all day long, especially as a guy that's just a freshman with so much of his career still ahead of him. It'd be an amazing fit for what Coach Hamilton wants to do, what Florida State has been for the last decade. I'm a big fan of this. I was so glad to see that he's going to be taking a visit. I can't remember off the top of my head if he has any more visits scheduled. I know Zach Anderson doesn't as of now, but man, what a big opportunity this would be for Florida State to bring him in. And if we bring Baba back, you know, maybe just put Baba at the five and go five out sometimes. You know, they experimented with that sometimes this year. I don't see a reason why they couldn't run that next year and just run five out with five people that can score and shoot the ball at any time. I wouldn't be totally against it. It reminded me a lot of the 16-17 team when they would run John Isaac at the five at times.
Yeah.
I don't see a reason why they couldn't do that and have Bol Bowen and Jerry Dane play the four that can both stretch the four, both give you length and athleticism, block shots, get steals, give you energy. You know, I think that'd be a lot of fun.
I agree. I'm not mad at the five out lineup, you know, especially with all that versatility. I just always question whether Baba really wants to play the five or not. I mean, I don't know if that's necessarily, I mean, his cup of tea. I mean, obviously he has the length and I think he has the size to play it, but I know that, you know, with his play style, you know, he likes to play, you know, in different positions. But I mean, if that were to happen, I mean, I'm not mad at it at all. I mean, that's super versatile. If you have a lineup with Baba Miller and Jerry Dan, you know, I mean, the floor spacing will be just incredible, you know, just being able to knock down outside shots, which is what Florida State definitely needs. But then also being able to move without the basketball and just being able to screen and just being able to, you know, just play anywhere on the floor. So I think, you know, that starting lineup or even just that lineup in general will be really incredible to watch.
It gives them some quality depth. And, yeah, you know, that Florida State didn't have a lot of quality depth. I think they had about seven guys that they felt good about. But outside of that, it got a little questionable at times. And, you know, getting guys like Dane or Anderson, even if they don't start, those are very quality depth pieces that this team needs.
Facts, 100%. So let me ask you this before we get out of here. So between Zach Anderson and Jerry Dane, with both of them having their visits, which one do you think that Florida State has the highest chance of signing, per se?
I haven't seen many other schools mentioned for Zach Anderson right now. It's kind of giving me Jameer Watkins vibes from last year. Right. Kind of fell under the radar. Watkins took his visit and then committed, and everyone was like, oh, this is a little interesting. It's kind of giving me some similar vibes to that, but Jerry Dane just feels like a Florida State player. Like, he just looks like one. So I would probably lean Dane for now, but I like where Florida State stands with both of them right now. Zach Anderson seems excited about his visit this coming weekend. I've talked to him a little bit. Jerry Dane hasn't gotten back to me yet, unfortunately, but like I said, I like where both of them stand right now.
Yeah, I mean, if you ask me that question, I'll probably lean more towards Dane, because I 100% agree with you. I think that he feels like he is a Florida State Seminole. I think that his style definitely does fit the team. I would love to have both. You know, I mean, I'm sure anybody would love to have both. You know, I mean, both of them are really great players, and I think that, you know, their own style, you know, would provide a lot of success to the team. So I would love to have both. You know, obviously Zach's coming up, you know, in the next few days or so. So I would love to see how that goes. And of course, Jerry Dane right after that, you know, a few weeks after that. So I'm just really excited for both of them. And then, you know, just being able to see, you know, if Florida State is going to be the team that they choose. But Austin, appreciate you for coming on once again, man. Let the people know where to find your work and everything.
Absolutely. Find me on X/Twitter at EasyVZNG. As far as the website stuff with articles, we're kind of going through a transition phase right now where I'm sure people have heard the news by now with Sports Illustrated having to drop a bunch of stuff with the Arena Base group. So we're working on getting transitioned with the new operating system and publishing company. So that may be a little bit before we see some articles on that end, but still active on Twitter, maybe a little too active, but that's where I'll be in the meantime.
Yes, sir. Please be sure to give him a follow, you know, for all Florida State updates and everything, man. So make sure to please follow my guy, Austin. Make sure to follow myself as well, Nick Andre ATR. Then you can check me out on Chop Chat. One of my recent articles was on the women team preview. Unfortunately, you know, didn't work out their way as they lost to Alabama in the first round, but make sure to be in tune with more content coming soon. But once again, thank you guys for listening in, and I hope you guys have a great rest of your day.
Thank you for listening to Believe. You can show support to your host by subscribing to the show and giving us a 5-star rating on your preferred platform. Check us out at Believe.com and search for BLEAV on YouTube.